You're listening to Passions and Prologues, a literary podcast where each week I'll interview an author about a thing they love and how it inspires their work. This is Adam Sokol, and if you are joining for the first time, thank you so much for tuning in. I really, really appreciate your support. If you have listened to the first three episodes, thank you for coming back. It means the world to me. In case you missed last week, it was an interview with Julia Whalen where we talked all about her truly masterful ability to pack a bag for a vacation. And I just can't explain to you how much fun that strange topic turned out to be. Instead of doing some positive feedback from all of you wonderful listeners, I'll just read a tweet that Julia said about the episode. This was an absolute delight. Adam asked me about my only hobby, and you can very clearly hear what I sound like when I cannot shut up about something. So just a really, really fun episode to check out if you haven't already. Today's episode is with Ryan LaSala, and we will get to the main aspect of our conversation in just a moment, but you might know Ryan from his two already published books, Bedazzled and Reverie, and he has a new creepy horror novel called The Honeys coming out on August 16th. So if you are listening to this when it comes out, there's still time to pre-order, which extremely helps the author. If you're listening to this after August 16th, go get your copy wherever books are sold. Before we get to that specific conversation, I want to offer you a book recommendation that I am really, really enjoying. And then I'll also do a TV show, which is a rarity for me. But I just finished The Woman in the Library by Sulari Gentile. And I feel like readers, there's a very specific group of readers. If you are a Reading Glasses fan, this is a reading wheelhouse situation. But readers love books about books, and specifically books about libraries. And of course, we all love a murder mystery. And this is a book about a murder mystery that takes place within a library, but it's also the ultra-rare book within a book within a book. The story kind of goes back and forth between these four new friends who met by chance in the Boston Public Library. They were in a reading room when they heard a woman's terrified scream, and it ends up being a murder. This is not a spoiler. It takes place on like the first few pages. But these four people become fast friends, and then they kind of realize that they think one of them might be the murderer as well. But it bounces back and forth between their story and this epistolary conversation back and forth between a very big fan of the person who's actually writing the story you're reading. And so it's this person giving notes to the author about different things that she could edit. And it's just really, really creepy and unsettling and interesting. But to me, it's like a perfect Agatha Christie novel. It's like one of those books where someone is murdered in a room that's locked from the inside, and all there is a puddle of water on the ground, and you have to figure out what happened. So truly incredible. The Woman in the Library by Sulari Gentile. Highly recommend it. The other thing I want to recommend is the TV show The Bear on FX. And if you've watched TV at all, you may have seen it, but it's hard for me to fall for a television show. I just don't like watching TV. I don't like long, drawn out things, but The Bear is a 30-minute kind of drama comedy about this world-class chef who goes back to his roots in Chicago after his brother dies by suicide, and he tries to save the like family-owned sandwich shop, basically. And it's just this incredible cast of characters, and it is so true to life to the food industry, and it's really incredible. So highly recommend The Bear, highly recommend The Woman in the Library. Both definitely check them out. Okay, today's conversation with Ryan LaSala. I promise that the format of this podcast is pretty standard. I find a person to talk to. We talk about a thing that they're super passionate about. I jokingly said in episode 2 with Brad Meltzer that he didn't know what we were going to talk about, but he knew it was going to be the Muppets, but that was me deciding. This is slightly different because Ryan didn't tell me what we were going to talk about until we were live and recording. So he gave me a few options, and I'll let you hear what we ended up picking. But Ryan is just one of the funniest people around. I've constantly said he's the best follow on all of social media, but he's hilarious, but he's also intelligent and such a wonderful writer. And he just really understands how to tell a story in a way that keeps you kind of, it sinks its teeth into you, and you can't let go, and you ride it out to the very end. So The Honeys is the exact same way, and you're going to love it if you've loved his other two books. So, okay, I'm not going to keep you in this intro any longer. I'm so delighted about this conversation. So I hope you enjoy this discussion with Ryan LaSala on Passions and Prologues. All right. So,
hello.
Ryan LaSala, hi, hello. This, you're the first person who has come on that I have no clue what you're going to say when I ask you this first question. Can't wait. Mm-hmm. So, Ryan, what's the thing or things you're crazy passionate about?
Oh my goodness. I have been waiting my whole life to be asked this question. I feel like I am just somebody who has a whole life that happens to write books. And that's like a really minor part of like my world in my mind, but it is the only thing that I get interviewed about. And so occasionally someone will ask me this and it's very exciting. So I have a bunch of stuff that we could talk about. So I'm going to give you like a choice. We could talk about anime, specifically mm-hmm. Sailor Moon. You know I love Sailor Moon. We yes. could talk about Cats the Musical. That is always a hot topic with me. Okay. I can see you flinching already.
No, well, listen, I'm not flinching so much. No, keep going. We'll see.
We can talk about cosplay and like con culture. That's what I thought we would talk about when I was thinking ahead of like what would actually be sort of like fun to talk about. That's probably a good one. Mm-hmm. We can definitely talk about working out and exercise. Actually, on my list when we were originally supposed to record this was going to be rollerblading, but literally then my friend broke their wrist right before we were supposed to have this interview. So I think we should take that off the table, but I'll see if I can like slip it in somewhere.
Okay. So tell you what, here's what we're going to do because I've done a recording with someone where we talked about powerlifting.
I heard.
And it was wonderful. And you are well known as well for being a very in shape person. I love every time you post. Honestly, the way that you post stuff about Big M, like when you, I think you, my favorite tweet of yours ever was you were like, breaking news, my arms or something. Let's do cosplay because we can work in anime and Cats technically there. I can ask
yeah.
out there. For people who have read your work, Bedazzled yeah. is mm-hmm. cosplay connected, but it's yeah. more so crafting.
Right.
So let's start from there because I do think actually before I ever interviewed you for Reverie, I think I did get to know you as an online person through mm-hmm. your frequent posting of mm-hmm. things that you created. So when did you start getting into cosplay? What interested in you about it? Kind of like take us through your introduction to cosplay.
The year is 2017 and I'm dating a really hot guy. And this is actually also, this is probably how you found me because this is like when book Twitter became aware of me. It's because I was dating this like really cute guy that everyone was like head over heels in. And in like book Twitter world, everyone's like a freaking nerd. So if one of us nabs like a civilian, especially a civilian with like a nice jawline uh-huh. and a symmetrical face, it's like big news to everybody. And so I was dating this guy who was super cute. And this is like the thing that like I was known for, my like really cute boyfriend. Mm-hmm. And also we would take a lot of photos at the gym. And this is how I got known for wearing like exclusively short shorts to the point that I attended a book event the same year as people were starting to learn my name. And someone literally came up to me and said, "Oh my God, Ryan LaSala, I didn't recognize you with pants on." Yeah. This is like the middle of February in Boston. And I was well, I do wear pants, except, mm-hmm. of course, like at the gym. So this guy, he's great. His name's Sal. He would not care about me mentioning his name. We're very good friends. I'm literally, mm-hmm. like, I was texting earlier today. I'm going to go support him at, like, a marathon. We're no longer dating. So that factors into the story. But at the time, he was like, "You're really creative. You're really crafty." Because I used to throw all these, like, costume parties. And mm-hmm. This was an amazing thing to him. I was throwing these amazing costume parties. And he was like, "I would love to see you, like, cosplay," by which he meant, "I would love to see you make me a cosplay so that we can go to like Comic-Con together." Because I'd never gone to like New York Comic-Con or like Anime Boston or any of these big conventions. And he had, and he knew that like, if you can craft something, if you can create a cool costume, like you become a celebrity for the day mm-hmm. at these things. And he saw his bid for power in my hands. Like I could create that for us. So that's how I got into the world of cosplay. It was through like this guy and making a costume for the first time, which we debuted at Comic-Con.
For the record, I think the reason that I discovered you was I think Sexy Anglerfish was making
yes. Oh God. Yeah. For those that don't know, one of my most iconic costumes is a sexy female anglerfish, which is this like horrific fish costume that just like hides the upper half of my body with like all these like teeth and then like really sexy legs with pumps on.
Yeah. I genuinely remember seeing that before. Like, I think our interview was scheduled and I saw that and I was like, I am so excited to talk to this human being. It's so great. So what was, do you mind talking about what the first like cosplay was of what you guys created and things like that?
Yeah, absolutely. So the very first cosplay I made, I should say we made, because he did help, but it was fundamentally sort of me making everything, because like it was in my apartment. I'm the one that like bought all the goods. Like I did all the research, but it was Hawkman from the DC universe. Mm-hmm. And at the time I was like, Sal, we should not both be Hawkman. That doesn't make sense. Like I'll be Hawkwoman, you can be Hawkman. And he was like, no, I want us both to be Hawkman. So it was very strange. It was like the two of us dressed in like the same costume. I had to make the same cosplay twice.
Nice, yeah.
And we did a really good job. It looked great. But the thing is, it was like how I learned how to make stuff at like that kind of scale, right? Like it was the most like put together outfit I'd ever made. And the result was, I didn't really know what I was doing. So we went all the way to Comic-Con and I was like so sleep deprived by the time we got there. We hadn't really had time to put anything together or on our bodies. So like the day that we wore was sort of the first day that we like tested anything out, and like, lo and behold, everything fell apart during the day. Like things just like would fall off our bodies. Like things were breaking. We were like hot gluing on the con floor. I literally had a hot glue gun with me plugged in at the Javits Center. I don't even think that's legal. Definitely not. And so it ended up being this like really tumultuous date for me. Of course, like the guy that I was dating, like he was having a great time because we were like taking photos with everybody. And I remember thinking like, wow, we're having really different experiences because I made this costume, but like you look better in it. So you're like getting all the attention and I'm like hot gluing in the background. And the day after, I called my agent and I was like, hey, I think I have a good idea for like a rom-com, and that became Bedazzled.
So when you're putting together a cosplay, because I feel like this is one of, I feel like there's a lot of areas of the internet that I am a like a lurker slash watch. Like I've never done cosplay, but I watch so many TikToks, Instagram reels and accounts where they're putting together their cosplay, and then, like the really elaborate ones where they have like mechanisms in there and stuff. And I'm always just blown away because I don't even like putting together a Halloween costume that takes more than like me going to the thrift store. So when I see people that are spending that much time on it, what honestly, the thing that I always am left wondering, and I'm gonna ask you, is how do you decide? It's almost like a, I guess, almost like when you decide what book you want to focus on for, you know, 6 months or however long it takes you to write the first draft, like how do you decide on a cosplay costume that you're like, okay, I want to spend X amount of weeks on this and X amount of dollars to go towards, like, how do you hone in on what you want to do next?
Well, I think fundamentally it's like, which character do you resonate with? Like whose like role do you want to step into? Cause that's what you're doing when you put on a costume, you're making the fantasy a wearable artifact that you can sort of step into. So like, I think that probably is the main thing that factors into a lot of people, right? Like whose power do you want to kind of become? However, for me, because I've only created sort of this one really big cosplay, and then the one that I made last year, I created like a him costume. If I look at like what's consistent between those two, it's usually like revenge is kind of the reason that I end up making something really elaborate. And what I mean by that is that after this whole incident at New York Comic Con years ago with this guy, we did end up breaking up, not because of like anything that happened at the con, but for like, you know, other reasons. But the in the aftermath, I did end up like having, it was like the next year and it was like a month before Comic Con, and I did end up having to like help him with his costume anyways, like a month after breaking up. And then the year after that, he stole my idea. Like I had this idea for us to work on and he took it. It was him from the Powerpuff Girls, which is like one of my favorite characters ever. And no one had read Bedazzled. I had only just finished writing it, but all of this like happens in that book. And I had written it before it actually happened in my real life. So I don't know if I like manifested it. Yeah, it was really weird. And so it was a little spooky. And when I finally was like, okay, I'm going to actually make something really cool, because I have time. This is like in the past year, and it was because of COVID. You know, I have a lot more time at home. The thing that my mind kept returning to was, I'm going to do justice like for the version of me that sort of exists between my books, in between real life, that like never got to like actually do this. And so that's how I picked creating the him costume that I wore last year.
I love that you like secreted into the universe a negative, like a
situation. Yeah, it was weird. And I'm like, I better keep this like pattern on the DL because my next book is about like horror and people dying, and I don't want to manifest that. So I don't want a repeat incident of stuff happening.
When you are focusing on a cosplay, see, here's why I'm glad that you gave me a few other things that you like talking about, because I'm going to see how I can do this.
Yeah.
Do you stick to like, I want to do stuff in like the anime world? Like, have you thought about doing a Sailor Moon? Are you thinking about doing a Rum Tum Tugger? Like, it was a Skimble Shanks. Like, are you going to do a cat? I think those two and Mr. Mustafa's are the three cats that I know. Do you have a thing? Because obviously cosplay is such a wide thing, and it can be obviously a lot of the cosplay that people are going to wear to a specific con is going to be themed around whatever that con is, but like do you tend to find yourself sticking to like anime or cartoons that you like? So like how's your process work?
I am so taken in by like the theater of everything and like the fantasy of all the things that I really love that I can see myself doing costumes for any of those things. Like the second I walk out of like Cats, or really like I saw Wicked recently too, and the second I walked out I was like, oh, I like want to try recreating like half the things I saw. And that's what I'm thinking about when I like watch shows or anything. I'm thinking, how can I make that? Because something that I've always had is this inclination to kind of manifest my dreams in reality. I mean, that's what Reverie, my first book, is literally about, right? Yeah. Like the theme is taking something that's fantasy and creating it in your world. And that's been something that I've tried to do my entire life, both with my books, but that's kind of how I got into crafting. That's how I got into like fashion and wardrobe alteration in general. It's because in high school, I consistently would see clothing, like women's clothing, that I thought was so much more interesting, but wouldn't fit me. And so I would alter it. I would buy like fabric. I would make my own clothes. I would buy like, boys' clothing and like paint on it, make it interesting, basically make it really flamboyant looking. And the urge to kind of create things for myself and to do stuff with my hands sort of underpinned all of it. So yeah, I could definitely see myself making something from Sailor Moon or something from Cats. Actually, one of my next cosplays will be a Sailor Moon cosplay, I think.
So some of the other conversations I've had to like, I've talked to the authors and we kind of have to like squint and be like, how does that thing connect to like Geely Siegel, who I know you know
really well. I love them.
Yeah, so Geely's wonderful. She talks about hockey. And so I was like, how does this work? And like, we found a way through it. But to me, it sounds like when you're talking about the process of going to like pick out clothing and then changing it up, like, is that process similar to when you're writing a book? Like, do you see through lines between the two?
Absolutely. I only started writing because it just felt like a cheap way that I could kind of continue doing this like art of manifesting dreams, right? Like when I was a kid, I would draw a ton. I actually still draw a ton. And I was like, I want to be an animator. I want to do comic books. And then I was like, no, I want to be a pop star. I want to be on stage. Like all of these kind of come from the same place of like, I want to express myself somehow. Mm-hmm. And writing just felt like something that like, it was cheap. It was easy. I was always going to have pen and paper or like a word processor on like a computer. And famously, you can get into writing with like $0, right? You don't need to buy anything to do it. And if you're traditionally published, like you don't pay anybody, right? You eventually get paid. So that's kind of how I got into writing. I just wanted to make stuff and it just felt simple to kind of go that route. Mm-hmm. But yeah, does that make sense?
Yeah, absolutely. And I actually know, I love that you mentioned the whole, like, you don't really need any money to become a writer. Like I told you before I started querying, and as people are probably getting tired of hearing me say, or before we started recording, I'm querying. This week I feel like I'm officially in the like writing community because I got my first group of rejections, which didn't
hurt. Amazing. Yeah, that's
like,
great.
Like the thing about it that I honestly really did enjoy is like I was able to find these literary agents who, because I've been in the literary world for a long time, like I know their name and I emailed them, and like just even the thought, like those people were like, hey, I read your query, and like they commented on, they're like, this is the part that I like, I'm gonna pass on it, but I really appreciate like even just that little like, I wrote this and there was no dollars towards it, and like I didn't ask anybody for anything, and it was just like this person responded. Like that in and of itself is lovely, and I want
you are in it, right? Like that's what the rejection means. It's like you are engaging. It's now a dialogue rather than you monologuing to yourself and your creativity.
Right, exactly. Yeah. But one of the things I wanted to ask you about is you were talking about these different things, like you said, like watching an anime or going to a show or seeing a piece of clothing that you wanted to kind of to change up, I feel like we're similar in a situation where thinking through your books so far, like Reverie and Bedazzled and then The Honeys, which is your next one coming up, where it's horror, like they're different types of genres. And you jump through, like there's all these different things you're interested in, like cosplay and anime and working out and these different things that you put yourself out online. And I love that it's not like, I don't want to say people who just do like one genre are just one thing, because that's not true. But are you the type of person, because I very much am, like I never want to be defined by one thing. I want to do all these different things. Like, do you think about that when you're planning out your next stories?
I have so much going on in my head that I feel like the thing that like comes to mind, I have so much going on in my head that I sort of worry about like the day when we can like broadcast our thoughts. Like if I was Jean Grey, the world would just be obliterated because I would have no filter over it. And all the people around me would be going insane with all the stuff that I like think about. And so I'm amazed when people can focus and sort of just do one thing and do it really well. And like again and again and again, but that'll never, ever be me. Mm-hmm. I sort of have like a lot of energy and I spend a lot of it. Like the thing that kind of gives me energy back is pushing it into all of these different types of projects. And like writing is the only thing that I've ever done where after I'm done doing it, I feel even like more energized, more myself, more like calibrated towards, it feels good to do. And same thing with like arts and crafts, creating. And so, yeah, I mean, I do think about kind of the whiplash that I've given to people because I am in so many different places. But unfortunately, that's just like a fraction of like what I have to deal with every day living inside my own head. So yeah. Sorry to the people out there. But I don't know. I'm of the mindset that, especially because I come at things from the point of view of like a queer creator, like I'm never going to have enough lifetime to further my agenda of proving that there's not a genre where like queer people don't belong, or there's not a space where like queer people like can't do it well. And I'm also delusional and spiteful. And so I also come from this from the angle of like, well, I can actually do it better. So yeah. I can do it better. And I can do a lot of things really well. So I'm sorry if you're exhausted by like how kind of pompous that sounds, but like I'm not gonna stop. That's kind of like how I approach like something brand new, is that I'm gonna do this and I'm gonna do it my way, and it's gonna be awesome because it's mine and it's gonna be super gay and you're not gonna be able to compare it to anything.
Yeah, but the thing is, like, I mean, maybe I don't think that sounds pompous because I also feel that same way. Like when I'm writing something, I'm like, well, I'm writing this because no one else can tell the story, and that's why it matters, and that's why it should be out in the world. And I like what, honestly, the way that I think about what you're saying is like, I read Reverie before, you know, obviously that was your first book, so there wasn't like a second book to go to. But then like when I read Bedazzled after Reverie, I was like, holy shit, these are completely different. I can't wait to see what he's going to do next. And so to me, I feel like that's how, I hope anyway, that's how other people approach your books, is like, I am imagining the person who reads The Honeys as the first Ryan LaSalle book that they ever read. And then they pick up Reverie and they're like, what the, but like, I don't know, to me, that's an exciting thing. And that's how I feel a lot. Like you were mentioning this about writing and creating, like it can be an exhausting process to read a book, or I imagine to create an entire cosplay costume, but then seeing the final product, does that give you that same feeling, almost like, look at this, watch this, here's how professional podcaster, almost like working out does, where you're exhausted at the end but then you want to keep going and doing it again because you can see the results?
Absolutely. The whole reason I like working out and, you know, arts and crafts, like the thing that those have in common is that you start a project and you can actually see the results on like a day-to-day basis. Like when you're a writer, so much of that process is just embedded deep in your subconscious and in your brain and, you know, maybe on a file on your computer or like a notebook, but you can't really hold it, right? Like it's just like a physical thing that lacks an actual like corporeal form. Yes. So you can't interact with it in like material reality like you can like working out or something like that. So I really love those other things because they give you that feedback right away. And there's something like really like it kind of embeds you in reality when you're actually making something with your hands or if you're like exercising. But I'm lucky enough that now that I'm like in my career as an author, I can actually hold these books and I can actually like pick up an idea that I had once. Yeah. And that's a really cool feeling. It's really cool to say, you know, this is the actual like bound version of a dream that I once had. And like, here it is. And further, it's cool to know that it's in a bunch of places. It's in libraries and stores, and it's changing sort of the, you know, those microcosms of reality out there, like one by one as well. So yeah, it's really neat to kind of see that influence take place in real time.
Do you, when you're working on cosplays, do you show like friends what you're working on, or do you kind of wait for the big reveal at the end?
I will show friends. I have a few friends, and they're actually the people that Bedazzled is like, the cast of that book is all modeled around like people that I actually know. And there's no like one-to-one parody, just in case these friends listen, they know this, but I have to point it out that like, there's no like one character per person. It's loosely inspired by my group of friends. And I will inundate specifically my like one friend, Christina, who's named in the book as well. I will inundate her with like progress photos, and she'll do the same for me. Like we both, like we work on things, we compete together. We actually competed in like a cosplay competition back in November, which is a great story if you want to hear it. But we'll send each other like progress photos, and the progress photos look bananas, because what I think people don't understand is like, and this is true for all costuming, like even like, you know, what you see the Avengers wearing, like before it looks good in final, it looks so bananas cuckoo crazy. Like there are photos of me with like saran wrap wrapped around my entire body and like then duct tape placed over the saran wrap, because that's how you sort of get like a mold of your body that you can then like adhere like armor to and things like that. And those techniques, like they're used like up the food chain in terms of costuming too. So I have a treasure trove of very awkward, very ugly photos of myself in like all of these states of like getting ready. And then finally at the very end, there's like a gorgeous photo. That's what goes on the internet. That's what everybody else sees.
Yeah. But
no, I take a lot of progress photos. You also have to take progress photos if you want to compete so that you can prove that you made the thing that you're wearing.
Mm-hmm. Well, and I love that you mentioned also that, like you said, like the things that you do are the same things that people are doing all the way up. And I do think that's one of the fascinations I have with cosplay, with writing, with looking at like bakers online and stuff. Is like, you see these people, like I follow, people probably wouldn't think about this knowing me, but like I follow a bunch of makeup artists on Instagram, like the ones that'll do the like, they have their, and it'll be TikTok too. Like they'll do like a little bit of sketching and then they kind of like turn and their dramatic, you know, reveal is like their entire face is like, it looks like a prison cell, or it's like, it's just like these insane things.
Yeah.
And so I love what you said, because you're right. Like knowing that in theory in 2022 and beyond, like someone could start a cosplay channel or they could start writing. And it's the same process that people who are making endless amounts of money and getting notoriety for, like if you just keep working on it, and that feedback, I imagine with like the cosplay community online is to be super like active. And how did you get into a competition with your guys' costume?
Okay. So my friend Christina texts me and she's like, hey, like cosplay season's coming up. Like, are you going to make anything? And this is like the precise moment when I felt that like ember of revenge flare back to life. And I was like, oh my God, now's the time. I'm going to create the like him costume from the Powerpuff Girls. It's also what Raffi and Bedazzled like creates for his big competition. And I don't know if you've ever encountered this. You definitely will in your writing career. Like there's always this sort of like gap between like, you know, because we're writing about phenomenal people, right? Like these heroes. And there's always this gap when people like meet us, the author, being like, oh, well, you know, you're not Katniss Everdeen. And like, it's like, well, yeah, of course, because we're right. We're making up people. And something that I'm self-conscious of, you know, is that I am a crafter, but I can't craft at the level of, you know, the kids that I'm writing about, but I am like heavily researching it. And I know when people look me up, they're probably expecting like someone who knows what they're doing. There's no really, you know, there's no evidence of that. So I was like, okay, this is my chance to actually show that like I can do this. And I'm not planning to like compete. I'm just planning to like make something cool and that'll be it. And of course that wasn't it. I ended up making it and we ended up like entering into, you have to apply to compete in the first place. So I applied to compete. We get into the competition and like suddenly it's on. And this is at Anime NYC, which is like the biggest anime
community
on the East Coast. Huge deal. So we get into the competition and Christina and I, like we make our outfits. And again, we are now acting out Bedazzled as like a pair. Cause this is like, again, like the friendship that like takes place with Bedazzled. We get to like the behind the scenes during the day of, and we immediately like are crestfallen because the people that are showing up for this competition, like, and we're in the beginners category, and the people that are in like the masters category have these like massive transforming cosplays. Like they press a button and a Bluetooth device like lights up a sword. Like they look amazing. It is truly like fantasy walking in real life. It was cool though at the same time, because you're getting to see all the people that you see, like you see online, and like they're real people. And again, it's that like you're confronted with the fact that like, you know, dreams are being made into reality. And you're like, wow, you made this with your hands. Like you're just, you know, you work at like Panera Bread and then you go home and you like do this incredible skill that is extremely coveted. Like that's awesome. I love that. And so we like, we have to present to the judges. The judges are I end up, like, you present to the judges, and this all takes place before, like, the sort of pageant portion of it. Mm-hmm. It's, like, the like, behind the scenes where they get to see everything up close. And the judges are, like, they hear my story about how, like, I wrote a book. They, like, are fascinated by this, and also, like, picking up on the fact that I'm, like, a crazy person for basically writing a book about my ex-boyfriend who's with me at the con currently and is having to watch me dress up in, like, this, like, revenge costume.
Yeah.
And get dressed up in, you know, all this stuff happens. And then we have to do the actual, like, pageant portion, which is in front of like a massive 500 person audience, and Christina and I, you know, we both do our walks, we get off stage, we're backstage, we're getting like complimented by, you know, the other contestants. Mm-hmm. And eventually, you know, they go to announce the winners, and you know, of course, like the beginners, intermediate, and master, there's like a first place for each of those, and then there's like, mm-hmm, a, you know, there's like a best in show, but there's also like little superlatives for people that are like, you know, just doing it for the first time and probably need some sort of validation. And so, yeah, we listen for the superlatives, and neither of us gets named. And it's stuff like, you know, sassiest walk, you know, best hair. And I'm like, I should have been, why not me? But, you know, so of course we like don't get named for those. So at that point, we sort of like step to the back of the stage because we want to like leave room for everybody else. And mm-hmm, then they go through like the winners of like the beginner, intermediate, expert, and then they get to best in show. And suddenly I hear my name.
Yeah.
And I proceed to win best in show for like the entire con, dressed as like this particular character who like is from this book, and who should shove through all of the cameramen, there's like people like interviewing me, who shoves through all of them but Sal, my ex-boyfriend at this point. And he like hugs me, and in my ear he whispers, honestly, this is a little fucked up, isn't it? I was like, yeah, eat it, bitch. Like, I was literally like this, like, interaction. It's caught on camera. And then I, like, proceed to, like, be handed a trophy and, like, flowers.
Oh, my God. Oh, that's so funny.
Yeah, it was truly, like, an incredible circular moment, mm-hmm, in my life. And, I mean, we're not even talking about this, but, like, the actual, like, reward of, like, getting awarded this by, like, other crafters and getting to, like, talk about, like, how I made stuff. Like, mm-hmm, that's really what I wanted. It wasn't about this relationship, and it wasn't about Bedazzled the Book. At that point, it sort of transcended to actually being acknowledged for, you know, the cosplay side of it, which was really cool. So now I'm, like, a person in the cosplay community, and yeah, I want to show as, like, a beginner, which is super cool.
I was just going to say, you clearly have to, like, you have to now make something to be entered into. Like, there's pressure. You can't not be in the next time, right?
I'm retiring. That's what I told everybody. I was like, actually, it's over. Like, I can't keep doing this where, like, I take my hobbies and I turn them into books, because then it turns into this, like, conflagration of, like, mm-hmm, pressure. And, like, that's what happened with, like, Reverie, The Honeys, Bedazzled. Like, I just keep writing about things that I, like, just happen to do. And yeah, I'm, like, running out of hobbies that I haven't monetized somehow. And that's what happened with, like, cosplay. I was like, lo and behold, this, like, thing that I did as a separate, like, refuge from writing has now, mm-hmm, become, like, yet another, like, kind of like career thing. And yeah, I'm kidding, I will definitely create more. I have, yeah, tons of plans to do stuff, but I have flirted with the idea of just like giving it up for good, because it's such a fluke to like win something like this. Mm-hmm. It feels like a fluke, and I don't want to lose, except, yeah, I actually don't really care that bad, but like, you know, it'd be funny if I stopped doing it forever.
Yeah. We'll be back with more Passions and Prologues after this break.
Bonjour. This is Fabulously Delicious, the French food podcast. I'm Andrew Pryor, and every week I bring you the wonderful and fabulous people involved in French food, whether they're here in France like me or from around the world. Enchanté. Each week, we dive into a specific topic, be it a French dish, an ingredient, or a French cuisine cooking technique. My guests are all about French food, so come join me on Fabulously Delicious, the French food podcast. Bon app.
And now, back to Passions and Prologues. Okay, so this will be a two-part to get into The Honeys a little bit. Have you thought about doing like a horror-related cosplay? And then also, like, how did The Honeys come about, since you kind of have like these almost like villain origin stories for the other two books? Like, where did the interest to want to write a horror novel come from? So you can do the anime. Have you thought of a horror anime first, and then we'll get into the actual book?
Yeah. So I have a bunch of craft projects for The Honeys. I'm not building any cosplays right now, because I'm sort of in promotion mode for that, yeah, book. Like, I'm about to be on like I'm touring in August for it. I have a bunch of other appearances. And so I'm not creating any, like, I guess they are kind of cosplays, but I'm basically creating like looks that I can wear like out in public, like for appearances. And so like I have designs in my head for like a bedazzled beekeeping suit, which I think would be really fun. Yes. Like, you know, like a beekeeper veil is some, like, such a rich costume piece that I'm like, oh, like I would love to like embroider something. So I have some ideas. I can't be too explicit about like a specific like Honey's cosplay, because there is one thing in the book that I think would be a really cool cosplay, but it's a total spoiler, so I can't like talk about it. But yeah, no, I, the biggest honor as a creator, as an author for me, is to see people like cosplay or create like fan art, or basically create stuff around my book. So while I have ideas for like what I'll make, what I really would love is for other people to like create looks or costumes, like, you know, surprise me at like a con. That would be the coolest thing in the world.
Yeah. So how did the book come about? Like, were you watching a specific movie, or like, what, how does this creepy horror novel and bees and everything come together? Were you, was it Macaulay Culkin and you can't see without his glasses? Like, what, how does this all come about?
So The Honeys is about a gender fluid kid named Mars, who uses like he, him pronouns in the beginning of the novel at least. And it's about him basically trying to investigate the like hot popular girls at a summer camp that he thinks have some connection to the murder of his sister, who like died in relation to like this summer camp. So Mars goes to summer camp to figure this out. And the main like kernel for this is that, well, I went to summer camp. I loved summer camp, but I also had like a few like pretty perilous experiences as like a very flamboyant kid at summer camp. Like, I think one of the few like fist fights I got into was like at summer camp. When it, and this is like sleepaway camp. So, you know, like you're in the woods for weeks at a time, is I would show up on summer camp and like just day one would lie compulsively. I would just make shit up about who I was. I would have an accent. I would have been royalty. And I would just like truly like create like a character and like my defense against like all things. And like one year I told like, I just, the counselors, that I had a medical exemption that meant that I had to have a walking stick with me at all times.
Incredible.
Not because of like a limp or anything, just because it was like my comfort walking stick, but it was just because I needed like a weapon in case we had a summer camp. And like another time I like invented a witchcraft cult and like recruited people into this cult during like, in this, I'm like nine at the time, just put this in perspective. And I just really like, eventually when I was thinking about like books I wanted to write, I wanted to return to the setting where, you know, it's kids in the woods, and whoever you are in society, whatever you have, it doesn't matter anymore, because there's no one else within earshot. Society is through miles and miles of forests. You've just got yourself and your cunning and whatever you can think of on the spot, right? And I wanted to write about like that particular tension. And that's why I put a queer kid in a summer camp, and summer camps are like very binary. So like if you're fluid, right? Like if you're like super queer, like I am, that becomes an issue, especially at like a boys and girls camp. And that's why Mars in the book is infatuated with the Honeys, these girls, because they are like sort of untouched by all of like these battles that Mars has to go through, because they're hot and like, you know, hyper feminine and popular, and they know something. And so that's what Mars is trying to get to, because in many ways, that's the kind of kid that I was at camp. I was looking to run from the boys, and I was looking to the girls for protection.
I love that concept of you can kind of be anyone you really do choose to be. I think, was it Campfire? Was it Elsie Rosen?
Yeah. Great example of this.
Yeah. So like they literally, their main character basically reinvents themselves to try to, if I'm remembering, sounds like you also know the book. I haven't read it in a few months, but they recreate themselves to kind of like get this boy that they like to sort of fall for them.
Yeah, they decide to like butch it up. Like they show up on camp, and like despite people knowing who they are, like they show up day one of camp, and they're like, "Actually, I'm Mask." Like, and everyone's like, "You're at a theater camp for gay people."
That was the incredible part about that is like every other person was like, "No, I really do love that idea of just being like, I'm gonna be who I'm gonna be, and we'll figure it out." Yeah, I also love, you're right. Like, I feel like summer camps, those like sleepaway camps, are a perfect horror setting for, and not just because of like horror movies, but they're like you said, middle of the woods, completely set. Yeah,
here's the through line. It's that like, and this is a theme that's in the Honeys too. Like, what it costs us to survive is oftentimes like, that's what's under the microscope for so many people. Like me as this like little like lying kid, like, yeah, I can like laugh about it. And of course, like there's probably something pathological about the way that I behaved, but that's what it took in order to like kind of stay safe in like those scenarios. And that's what like Mars has to do in The Honeys, is that he's got to like do stuff that like are morally super ambiguous, but ultimately like how can we critique somebody when they're fighting for survival or for like, you know, revenge or for, you know, a just cause. And I think we oftentimes create our means of survival. And that's kind of what like costuming brings me as well, right? Like a lot of people, drag queens included, have to kind of create power in the form of like a persona that they step into and embody. And I think that that's such a fascinating exchange between like, you know, a normal human and then this like more powerful entity that they've got to become in order to, you know, outlast a harsh world. So I think that there is sort of a connection between a bunch of these different things. I'm doing your job for you.
No, you're really killing it. Yeah, right. Ryan also has hosted a podcast, by the way. No big deal. Like,
yeah, but it's about Tyra Banks. So it's a little different. And I would say that don't exist in Tyra Banks.
But actually, I did want to ask you, kind of talking about all these things that you find joy in that you have, that, as you said, monetized. I had a couple conversations with authors. So Kaylin Bayron was on and talked about musical theater, and she talked about how she inserts that stuff into her stories. But then Mallory O'Meara was talking with me about how like she loves powerlifting. And one of the reasons she loves it is because being in the book world, like we all are, she's like, even the thing that I enjoy to do for fun, which is reading, she's like, I'm kind of a book person. And if I talk about a book online, it's going to get attention and I can't be negative and it's stressful. So she uses powerlifting as like, that's her outlet.
Yeah.
And it sounds to me like you start off with an outlet and then like, I'm actually going to write about that. Like, do you have to be cautious for your own kind of like mental health and to find that line of taking a break? Because as an author, you could in theory just constantly be working. Like, are you able to separate like, oh, this is a cosplay thing that I'm doing this for me, or this is a, you know, I'm watching this anime because I love watching anime. Like, are you able to shut it off, or do you always find yourself seeing like little ideas here and there?
It's kind of a constant, incessant flow of like, oh, I could use this. Oh, that would be really interesting to create. And I mean, luckily, like I said, creating stuff brings me so much energy and like so much joy that I don't feel vexed by this. But sometimes I do sort of wish I had something that was like completely separate. And that's what like, you know, working out is sort of that thing for me as well, right? Like it's totally a part, it requires like zero real brain function. I can like totally tune out. Yeah. I mean, there are times that I'm like, I wish I could kind of step out of this. Ironically, the thing that like, now that I'm like a full-time creative, I have all these creative pursuits, the thing that I like dream of, I'm like, I feel like I'm gonna get like canceled for this, is having like a like minimum wage job, just like a side job. Like I want to go work at Panera Bread. I want to work at Panera Bread. I want to change my name. When people ask me what dreams and like what I do on my free time, I lie and I say nothing.
Yeah.
And I just like, I have a job, I have a task and I can just do it. And literally the job that I think about, like it's not actually Panera Bread. I think about in Willy Wonka, Charlie Bucket's father's job is like screwing toothpaste caps on. And that's like my dream job. I'm like, oh, that sounds great. Like I could just go and like listen to music and I have one task and I just do it over and over and over again. And like the monotony is just so appealing to me. And I'm like, not just talk on this. I've literally like, I mean, the irony being is that like, I'm talking about getting a job as a hobby. like aside from my actual job. But recently, like, I was chatting with some old coworkers from like my job in tech before I was an author, and they were like, oh, actually we need some help with this thing. And I was like, oh my God, can I like do that for you? So like, now on my like free time, I just do like little like corporate tasks. And it like brings me like meditation and I get paid for it.
I was gonna say, I love the idea. That's how you know you are a good employee, when you leave that company to pursue your dream. And then you're also like, but I'm also freelancing for them on the side. Like,
yeah, this is truly like, and I mean, the irony is, so the work that I'm doing for them is like interviews and like recruitment type stuff. Cause I'm like talking, I like to talk to people and I can talk all day. So they're having me like, you know, interview like potential employees. And it's always really funny when like someone has like looked me up because they're like, yeah. Oh, I have an interview with like Ryan LaSalle. And they like Google me and they're like, I have an interview with like a clown, basically. Like, who is this person? And they almost always think I'm somebody else until somehow like the conversation will like merge these two things and they'll like admit, they're like, oh my God, yeah, I like did a bunch of research. I also pre-ordered your book because it sounded good. I wasn't sure if that's who I was talking to. That's you. And I'm like, yeah, sorry, that's me. Anyhow,
that's amazing.
Talk about salary requirements.
On a different extent, like I was telling you before we started recording, I work for this wonderful tech company. It's plural site. I'm not like hiding where I work, but like people will join our company because it's so large and our marketing team is so wildly talented. Someone will come on and I'll be like, I recognize that person. And then I'll look up their name and it's like, oh, cause they have a giant food blog that I get recipes off of like once a week, or like, oh, I follow their dog on Instagram. Like it's always something like that. It never fails. It's so funny.
That's so weird. That's so interesting though.
Yeah. All right. So I am always, the last question I'm having everybody answer is just like giving a recommendation for everybody. It could be a book. It could be an anime. It could be to watch Cats, whatever you want, like a recommendation to be for everybody. What's a thing that you're really enjoying lately?
Something that I'm really enjoying lately. I am going to go with an anime, actually. Hold on. I want to double check. Okay. I have two things to talk about.
Okay.
First and foremost, if you have Netflix, these are two programs on Netflix that have just brought me like a lot of joy on the side. They both have to do with little Japanese children. The first one is Old Enough, which is a program from Japan where it's basically like little kids in Japan, because it's such a safe environment, being told to like go run errands. And like, we're talking like 2-3 years old. And it's just like cameramen following these kids that are like trying to accomplish the daunting task of like delivering a letter to like the neighbor down the street. And it's so cute. They get like distracted. They like pick flowers. They don't know how to do stuff. They like learn how to ask for help. And it's like 7-minute episodes. And you like, it's not like emotional or anything like that, but you'll sort of like cry because it's so cute.
So cute.
Very,
yeah.
Very cute. And then the other, you will also cry if you watch this, but it's this anime called Kotaro Lives Alone, which is, I think it's like also on Netflix. And it's about this man who lives in an apartment complex. Like he's like an artist and his life's not really going anywhere. You can tell that he's like depressed. He literally wears a sweatsuit at all times. One day his like doorbell rings because he's got a new neighbor, and his new neighbor is a 4-year-old named Kotaru who like lives alone, hence the title of the anime. And in the anime, like the big mystery is like, why does this like child live alone? The child's like extremely formal, can like take care of himself, but like no one really understands like why this like child like lives alone, and that's like the big mystery. But it's really sweet because basically the child has a lot of pride, and so all these people are trying to help this kid, like basically act as like they're standing for the parents, but they can't tell, like they can't betray to the child that they're helping him, so they have to make up reasons that actually like the child's helping them, right? Like do these like chores and things like that, go food shopping, and as a result, all these people that live in this apartment complex that never knew one another and sort of lived their lives in like parallel start to kind of form a family around this kid, like trying to raise this kid. And eventually you do sort of learn more about like the backstory, and it's heartbreaking and beautiful, but it's super cute and like also, you know, short little like episodes. So if that's something that you want to watch, you can turn it on in the background. It's really cute.
That sounds amazing. I am absolutely going to check that out.
It's really good. It's really great. I sobbed in the second episode. So good luck.
Thank you. Perfect. That's fine. Yeah. That's good. All right. Well, Ryan, you, as I've told a few times on these interviews now, like the first just like several, like the first like dozen of these episodes of this podcast are just me talking to people that I am friendly with. And so when I reach out to you, you immediately are on board, which I appreciate. But also I will say this wasn't just so Ryan can come on and talk. If it's before August 2nd that you're listening to this, go pre-order the Honeys. If it's August 2nd or later, go buy the Honeys.
Please.
Yeah. Make sure Ryan can keep doing his cosplay.
Craft supplies are expensive. Literally, they're so expensive. So rhinestones don't pay for themselves. Please go buy my books. That's my sale.
Ryan, thank you for joining me today.
Thank you so much for having me. This is such a joy. Thank you.
Passions and Prologues is proud to be an evergreen podcast and was created by Adam Sokol. It was produced by Adam Sokol and Sean Rule Hoffman. And if you are interested in this podcast and any other evergreen podcast, you can go to evergreenpodcast.com to discover all the different stories we have to tell. Thank you.
Anne-Marie Kelly. Wild Precious Life is a podcast about dreaming big, digging in and connecting across distance, division, and loss. In each episode, I talk with prize-winning writers, musicians, and wanderers who remind all of us how we can make the most of the time we have. So meet me here. Let's walk and talk and dream and discover what it means to be wild, precious, and brave.